participation, that we've got your back on the international issues, even at the Hill level. This year, Congressman Joe Walsh introduced a bill which would, first of all, pull back all UN funding if the UN and the U.S., that is the executive branch, went forward with any kind of treaty which would impinge on our Second Amendment rights and, for that matter, other fundamental constitutional rights. Secondly, that legislation would also, and did, in fact, send a message to the Obama administration that we will not tolerate using taxpayer dollars to engage in a process at the United Nations, which the ultimate outcome will be denigrating our constitutional freedoms, period. End of statement. And so, that message was received. I happen to know it was received, inside the administration. And, as Julianne and other presenters will, explain later on during the course of the conference, we've had a good deal of success in that regard at the international level. We also, on the Senate side, were able to get members of the Senate, and I want to particularly point out Senator Jerry Moran from Kansas, who was very helpful and supportive on the arms trade treaty. So by continuing this process next year in 2013, because regardless of what happens here in the United States, the anti-gunners are certainly not giving up at the international level, and we have to remain vigilant. A lot of time is taken up on the part of our community in fighting at the international level, but it's absolutely critical to preserving your right of access to firearms and ammunition. And finally, I would like to say for 2013, for our legislative agenda, we have had in some years some reform measures like the Firearms Owner Protection Act, which I would classify as the big bill that might do something positive for our gun interests. But I want to suggest to you that for the future, instead of the anti-gun community getting at us by death by a thousand cuts, we should respond with success by a thousand amendments. And by undertaking relatively smaller measures, but more frequently, I think we can have a very successful outcome over the next several years. So let me leave you with that thought, and thank you again.
Thank you. Thank you, Joe, Larry, Mark, Jeff. We have our second panel coming up right now, which is our first state panel, followed by the second state panel. And I want you all to know I'm going to go have that cup of tea that somebody brought me so that I am more on tune and on top of this. Sam?
Good morning and aloha. I'm Sam Sloan, and I bring you greetings from the 50th state. You know, the 50th out of the 57 states in Obamaland. Greetings from Steve McGarrett. And greetings from the birthplace of our beloved president, maybe. You know, Hawaii is fighting Illinois for the honor of the presidential library. It'll be a small library, maybe one or two books and, you know, a very small area. And some of you know that I did live in the same building with the president for 7 years and worked with his grandmother at the Bank of Hawaii. Look, the action is at the state legislature. This is where you could make a difference. This is where you have to get involved. Now, Jeff said, Jeff Knox said that, you know, you have to have a federal affairs coordinator, and that's true. But the real action is at the state legislative level. And during the past year, there hasn't been too much activity. In Hawaii, for example, we held tight with the legislation that we had. And there were some interesting things that could be done and were done. For example, the Hawaii Concealed Carry Coalition was posting information on the Honolulu Police Department Facebook, and the police department took the comments down. The Hawaii Coalition threatened to sue on free speech and First Amendment rights and the fact that the posting on Facebook is public information. The police department thought over the idea and decided to allow the comments. After Aurora, there was an uproar about having more legislation in Hawaii, more restrictive legislation. Then they looked around and they said, oh, wait a minute, we're already very restrictive. But they did have a legislative briefing that was announced. It was going to be about peace. And the Hawaii Rifle and Pistol Association decided to come to that legislative hearing. And in fact, their presence was well known by the head of the committee, who had arranged to have the proceedings broadcast live on TV. But the coalition and the Hawaii Rifle Association decided to testify and to have a presence there. And they made a difference. What they did was they changed it. And they showed that, yeah, you want peace, then you better have gun rights as well. So my point is you can make a difference locally and the state legislature. You have to work with coalitions with other states. You have to be mindful of what's happening at the federal level. But there are things that everybody can do. And during the day, today and tomorrow, you're going to hear a lot of suggestions. But make sure that you meet people from other states. Make sure that you work together. And make sure that in your personal life, you're able to talk to your relatives, your friends, your coworkers, your employees. Because again, to assume that they know the issues or to assume that they're going to do the right thing is a dangerous assumption for this very important legislative year. So in conclusion, what I would say was, do not feel that you're powerless. You are powerful. And your legislators work for you. They are public servants. Sometimes you have to remind them of that. But do it, and do it now. And finally, make a stand, make a statement, make a difference, elect freedom. Aloha.
Wow. A lot of faces out there. My name is Rich Naskak. I'm executive director of Florida Carry, along with Sean Carana, my cohort in crime. You know, we formed Florida Carry a little while back, not even a year ago. I'm supposed to ignore him. We formed Florida Carry a little over a year ago. And in that time frame, we've been able to grow the organization to over 9,000 members and supporters. Thank you. I'd like to welcome, you know, as an executive director of Florida Carry, I'd like to welcome you all to the Gunshine State. And, you know, you don't appear to me, I mean, just glancing across the crowd, you don't really appear to me to be illiterate, bloodthirsty, redneck knuckle draggers. But yet, that's what the press looks at you as. That's what the gun haters look at you as. I'm retired military. I spent a career in the Air Force. Thank you. I was privileged enough to be stationed in West Berlin at the time the wall came down. Folks, you really don't know freedom until you've seen a population that has been deprived of it. The people I saw there really had no life in their eyes. Matter of fact, one of the things that we used to do was, at that time, you know, they didn't have euros. They had marks, German marks, and, West Germany had their West German marks and East Germany had their East German marks. And, officially by the East German government, the exchange rate was 1-to-1. Unofficially, any bank in West Berlin would give you 10 East marks for every one West mark. And so one of the things that we were allowed to do as military is we would go to East Berlin and shop. And it was great. My wife has got more stuff from East Berlin. And it was dirt cheap. And one of the things that I used to like to do was collect, little electric trains. They have, believe it or not, pretty good workmanship. But, a group of us went in and we were required to wear uniforms. A group of us went into an East German train shop, little hole in the wall. And the proprietor there, started to serve us. He had talked to a couple of the other guys, and then, whoa. Okay, all right, I'll keep going. So one of my cohorts in crime over there, another Air Force member, was trying to buy this beautiful model of an old German steam engine, and it was a 1,000 or 1,200 East German marks, which was $120, great deal. The proprietor suddenly got this, and I don't know why, but another person had walked into the building, somebody we didn't know. He wasn't American, he wasn't military, but he was wearing this coat. And he walked in, and the East German store proprietor took one look at him and immediately started saying, "I'm not going to serve any more Americans in my store. I'm a proud East German. And I support the party," and so on and so forth. All this political rhetoric. Anyway, he kicked us out of the store. The only thing I can think of is that this person who walked in was a member of the local party. And they influenced him. Well, I don't know if he was Stasi. Stasi is a little bit less subtle than that. Stasi would come in and, you know, bang you over the head, drag you out to a car, you'd never be seen again. But anyway, the reason I say this is because, you know, cherish your freedoms. Because you really don't know what you're missing until you go to a place where those freedoms are not present. Folks, I'm here to talk about legislative affairs. Now, I don't know how it is in your state. Here in Florida, the Florida legislature is a jungle. Oh, yeah. And there's animals in the jungle. There's tigers. There's sheep. And there are a lot of rhinos. For those of you who don't know what a rhino is, it's a Republican in name only. These are the folks who harbor liberal tendencies. They don't like guns in general. The reason they're Republican is simply to get elected. Because they know in their districts they cannot get elected if they have a D after their name. And we run into them all the time. And I don't know how it is, and like I say, in your state, it's very possible you have the same affliction. But it's up to us to be able to identify these people. It's up to us, and trust me, it's hard to get an incumbent out of office. But it's up to us to identify these people. It's up to us to expose them for what they are. And it's up to us to be on their backs day and night. And I'm not talking about just the rhinos. We need to do this with the sheep, and we need to do this with the tigers as well. Now, we need to be out there knocking on these people's office doors when they're out of session, calling them up in Tallahassee or whatever your state capital is while we're in session. By the way, do you know that since in Florida we got preemption passed, HB 45 was passed in the 2010 legislative session, that we can now carry firearms in the state capitol building with a license. And that's something I never thought I'd see happen, but, you know, it happened. Stranger things happen. You know, the legislators, it's not their fault, because in general they're uninformed. I mean, I've talked to many of them, and I've sat as an audience member in panels such as this and listened to them speak. And they don't really know. They don't know gun laws. They don't know guns. They don't know when they're being lied to. Excuse me. Getting over a cold. My grandson brought it home from school. They don't really know when they're being lied to by gun haters. I mean, how many people have you run into who have no idea what a true assault rifle is? Now, it's this big, black, scary, military-looking thing with a thing that goes up. I'm telling you, they really don't know, and it's up to us to educate them. It's up to us to bring them the facts. Statistics, data, studies, and studies from independent agencies, okay? Not studies from the Violence Policy Center. Bring these things to them. Bring it in front of them. Set them down. Talk to them about it. And you got to do this on the local level. Education, it's key. Okay? They're depending on their constituents. They're also depending on their aides, their legislative aides. Talk to the legislative aides. These are the folks that actually draft a lot of the legislation. Okay? They're a key player in this. Even though they don't get their name in lights like the legislator does, and often, I mean, they're doing a lot of the footwork, and they need to know. They need to know the facts. So in summary, folks, and by the way, you all know that it's illegal in Florida to carry a firearm down in the airport terminal, right? Somebody told you all that already? Yeah. One of, like, I think 7 states that has that prohibition. I just wanted to let you know, just in case. In summary, it's my view that we are not fighting for rights. We're fighting to regain rights we once had. And I intend to keep up that fight. Florida Carry intends to keep up that fight. And I hope, that you all will keep up your efforts in your home states. And God bless you.
Morning. My name is Patrick Shelmo. I'm from Maryland Shall Issue. For the record, you'd have been luckier if the lights were left off. I'm short, I'm bald, and the glare is going to get right in your eyes. So, what is Maryland Shall Issue and who are we? Maryland Shall Issue is Maryland's organization. By our name, you can pretty much figure out what it is we're doing. We have roughly 10,000 contributing members and probably about 20,000 associated members. We're a rapidly growing organization. We sit at the nexus, of course, in Maryland, where we have this interesting state versus federal. I mean, we literally have good portions of our territory and our people inside the Beltway. For those who haven't lived there before, it's kind of a frightening experience at times. Everybody on the state level wants to be on the federal level, and everybody on the federal level is pretty much kissing to the state level. It's really quite an interesting thing. Maryland is kind of an exciting thing in the gun rights movement right now. I'm sure many of you are aware of the Second Amendment Foundation and what they've done nationwide with lawsuits with Mr. Alan Gura and other good select local counsel. Well, as it turns out, Maryland is the first state in the nation that at least has a federal judge who has said, we're going to force you to go shall issue. Now, we're currently on hiatus. We'll be on hiatus for probably the foreseeable future. But it was an exciting win, and it did galvanize a number of things at the state level. I think there are some lessons coming out of Maryland that are going to apply, I hope, very soon to places like California, New Jersey, New York, Massachusetts. I've had the pleasure, actually, of growing up in New York, living in California for good periods of my time, and in Maryland. My wife says if I have to complete the axis of evil, I should be going to New Jersey and Massachusetts next. Quickly, what I wanted to do is, Maryland is still a discretionary issue state. Prior to Woolard coming down, which is the case that the federal judge just went ahead and decided, we actually have not been, MSI, along with some other folks in the state, had prevented a gun control law from going into effect for quite some time. As a matter of fact, we actually pushed civil immunity 2 years ago. We teamed with the Megan's Law folks. So what we do is we actually, our level of success in a democratically led legislature, and a place where our governor says it's a progressive wonderland, and that's what he wants to build, is we actually have to reach out and team with as many people as we can, plus bring as many of ours to bear as possible. We've instituted a number of tools. One thing we do is we reach out with, say, the Megan's Law people to push corollary legislation with each other and amendments to bills. Civil immunity was one of the things we were able to do with them and push forward. We're one of the few states now that actually have a civil immunity law, especially among the May issue denizens. Now, Woolard did a couple of things when it came down just in March. It frightened a number of people on the gun control side. It also galvanized action on our side. One of the things that we saw in the last session, and it's an anecdote and a lesson, I think, for other places, is We had a reaction in our state legislature. Our General Assembly was convened at the time. And what we had were the typical cohorts that we have on the gun control side within the legislature who at the very last minute schemed to put together this great conspiracy. And they all worked behind the closed doors. And it was an interesting story I'll bore you with later. But the end result was they took a law enforcement bill, put it in Senate Judiciary, gutted the entire thing, every letter out of it, rewrote it as a training bill for concealed carry. What that means is that you are going to pay $500 to stand in line for a class that the Maryland Police Commission was going to create, some political commission. Essentially, they were enacting a significant hurdle to carry. They put this right before Easter weekend. We have a very specific set of laws in Maryland that say that we have to convene our General Assembly at a very specific time. You cannot go over. They snuck this thing through. It was pre-approved, governor on down. Within 1 hour, Maryland Shall Issue started a rampage of, well, let's just put it this way. We had over 350,000 individual citizen contacts on our General Assembly. We're not talking form letters. We're talking about individually written emails, phone calls, visits, door knocks at the Capitol. And this happened during the session. We, according to the Senate, we melted their systems. And they said, no more gun control. We can't do this. The words were, they're melting our Capitol. So what we did is we kept melting it, we kept melting it, we kept melting it. As a matter of fact, we melted it so good that they couldn't raise any taxes because we kept locking down the judiciary committees and all the other committees with our motions to recommit. They couldn't pass taxes. The governor had to call a special session several months later to raise our taxes. Yay. Ward also opened doors at the Maryland State Police. So lesson one, I think, for other states, things we've found successful is automate your tools. Every single one of our members and associates can actually get an instantaneous contact to say you are needed right now. It's on their cell phones. It's in their emails. It's not just on a web page. That right there, immediately within an hour, we started melting those systems. Lesson two, reach out to your state police. Reach out to your issuing authorities. We have had great success. The entire time between Woolard and the time the court actually said make it happen, we actually worked with the state police. You know, they see the writing on the wall. They know where this thing is going. They're trying to become neutral arbiters of what this thing will become. Secretly, we are working in the background with them, creating a new application process. And right up until the last moment when the judge issued a final stay, they were getting ready to issue several hundred permits on the first day. In their words, our laminators are warming up. We're going to issue them the moment the judge tells us to. These people don't want to get sued again. So thank you again, Second Amendment Foundation. Our upcoming session is going to bring a couple of things. This is going to be the last push for gun control, I believe, in Maryland, the last serious push. We've already seen a couple of things. Training, it's going to come back. They're going to keep pushing this as a bill. We're working with the Maryland State Police to come up with what we think is a sensible training regimen. Maryland right now is an open carry state if you get a permit and has no training requirement. Now, I am not in favor of enacting regulations where they don't need it, where we don't have them right now. However, the practical reality is, and this is something at the state level we recognize, at the practical level, someone's going to put training in place. The question is whether we write it or whether they write it. We're working with the Maryland State Police. We're working with other interested law enforcement agencies to go nationwide to teach them what has worked in places like Florida and Virginia, and we're teaching them what is going to work within Maryland so that we can go ahead and prevent training from becoming a significant roadblock to the people. And in the future, we're doing things such as when we are forced into Shall Issue, we're going to be pushing roving gun clinics. We're going to be teaching people how to apply for these things. We're doing live scan on site. Again, other lessons. Thank you for your time today. I do appreciate the opportunity to have Second Amendment Foundation in our corner. I'm going to put this back because the next person is going to be taller than me.
Good day. Good morning. I'm Jim Irvine. I'm with Buckeye Firearms Association. It is a pleasure to be here, and Elect Freedom is such an appropriate title or name for this conference. Electing freedom is what we all need to go home and do. Buckeye Firearms Association is a PAC. We're a political action committee, so what we do is we influence elections, and then we go affect laws. It's a vital thing to not only defending our rights, but to restoring our rights that we have lost prior. A couple prior speakers have touched on the
working with other groups and getting along with things, I can't emphasize enough how important it is to realize how much what happens in one state affects us in the other 49 states, and how important it is to work with each other, and how important groups, meetings like this and tonight's social hour it is to meet people, exchange business cards, exchange phone numbers, emails, get to know folks, because we have to work together. For an example, Florida Kerry, Sean, put out a list of mayors against illegal guns, information that they were putting people in states and working at the state level to do Michael Bloomberg's business. And Joyce Foundation funds this stuff, very insidious stuff. I came across their list on their information. We've used it in Ohio to do some work. Media Trackers has run stories on it. Emily Miller with the Washington Times has picked up some of that stuff and run it. It's really important to understand what's going on, how your enemies work, and if you understand them and know thy enemy, you can beat them. So I'd encourage everybody, any of the organizations here, do a Freedom of Information request and find out what they're doing, what they're talking about, what their issues are. Get to know what they're doing in your state so that you can fight a smarter battle against them. Also on the Maryland side, he's right about melting down legislatures. It's unbelievable the power you have. But Maryland's got a lawsuit that they've won that's going to force these May issues to become shall issue states. We have a foundation that's filed an amicus brief with on their behalf, or not on their behalf, but in support of their case. So again, it's important that we work together as state groups, and what happens in one state affects us all. If we can get their lawsuit to push forward, we change New Jersey, New York, California, all of these other hostile states, and we get rights for all of us. When we're forcing the anti-gun side to play defense, we take away their ability to play offense. We're moving the pendulum back the way we want to move it. We're not just responding to them. We're making them respond to us. And that's the key to victory. Couple other things I want to mention is working with the legislatures once you've got them there. Mike DeWine was a vehemently anti-gun senator, NRA F ranking the last time he ran for office. He was Brady campaign's first endorsement 6 years ago. He was defeated because gun owners don't like that stuff. I think it's actually good for our side when Brady comes out and trumpets one of their people, because the masses don't support their nonsense. But after he got home in district, you know what? Losing is a painful lesson. These people like power. They like the importance of being in an office. And Mike DeWine came to me and said, hey, I'm going to run for office again. I want your support. And of course, there's no way you can support somebody like that. But we talked about what he needed to do. You know, an election year conversion really isn't going to convince anybody after all of the votes you've done in the Senate and the nonsense that's gone on. And he says, yeah, I understand that, but if you can keep it civil, I promise I'll have an open door. So you work with what you have, and today I'm happy to report that this formerly F-rated candidate has been true to his word. He has been very good in the Attorney General's office, which is very important in Ohio. It handles all our reciprocity. He's done a good job there. He's kept us in the loop on legislation that they're working on that may be of interest to not just concealed carry license holders, but gun owners on tangential issues. And so that relationship's really important. So even somebody who is not friendly to you, if you can build a relationship and educate them on your issue, you can bring them along. And that's really the point. It's not just to preach to the choir. It's to go out and get the other side to understand your point of view. Convert the anti-gun people to pro-gun people. Get them to work for you. We've had anti-gun people, you know, the joke, the difference between a pro-gun and an anti-gun is one mugging. But we had a state legislator who's anti-gun, who's voted against all of our bills, who, taking a walk in front of his house one night, gets a gun stuck in his face. And because he's a legislator, the paper runs over. And what did you think when that happened? And God bless his heart, of all the possible answers this man could give, he said, I thought about my vote on concealed carry, and I understood now what those people were talking about, and I wish I had that vote back. So I called him up, said, Mr. Legislator, I read this comment. I love that. I'd like to chat with you about this stuff and would like to offer you a concealed carry class. So his wife actually became an awesome spokesperson for our group because as a black woman, she could reach people that I can't as a white man. It's just the facts of how things go. So it's working with people that, number one, are your friends, but number two, that may not start out as your friends, but help them understand the issue. And they become awesome advocates because now they go into the lion's den that is the anti-gun caucus or the anti-gun groups or meetings. And it doesn't matter whether it's at work or church or schools and help spread your message because somebody says something. You know what? That's not true. Have you ever taken a gun class? And all of a sudden everybody's like, no, have you? Yeah, let me tell you about it. And again, it empower those people to go be prophets for our cause. And lastly, when we got into this years ago, I didn't understand anything about PACs or all of the rules and how important they are. Somebody told me if you can influence an election, or you can influence an election, less than 10 votes per precinct, almost every election. Well, that didn't make any sense. But as you look into it, it's amazing how many elections are close, especially the battleground state, the battleground districts or states, depending on what elections you're talking about, which are going to shape the power in the legislatures, state or federal. It is easy in one afternoon, the time you're spending here, I guarantee you each one of you can change 10 votes. It's easy. All you have to do is show up and do some work. Take a friend with you. Now you double that. Take those lessons, reach out to those in your community. Don't be afraid to talk about the issue because the majority of people support us. They just think from watching the media that they're in the minority. So don't be afraid to raise the issue and talk about it with people. You can bring people along. You can educate people. The number of people in this room, it is mind-boggling the power that we have. That's the reason they want to shut down gun shows because they don't want this sharing of information and getting to know each other. That's the power of today. That's the power of gun shows. So use that power wisely. And I appreciate your support. Thank you very much.
Good morning. First of all, I would like to say thank you to Second Amendment Foundation, to servicemen and women, and especially to God for helping us to be here with you. Damas de la Segunda Enmienda. That's who I represent. My name is Sandra Barreras. Ladies of the Second Amendment is a newly formed nonprofit organization dedicated to promote, protect, and educate the fundamental gun rights of each individual based in Puerto Rico, where our government treats all matters related to guns as a privilege strictly regulated by the state. For the last 46 years in Puerto Rico, Sandra Barreras, my mother, and husband, Jose Barreras, have been fighting, talking, and educating about the Second Amendment. Way before the court declared it as a fundamental right, they had been explaining on radio, television, and to the government to understand that it's a fundamental right, not a privilege. Ever since I was a little girl, I was educated to fight for my gun rights, and all rights should be treated equally. Can you imagine how difficult it was for me growing up, listening to people saying, when you're the only person against five, thinking one way, you must be wrong. Well, but then watching and listening my parents swimming against the current and determined with mind-boggling inspiring for me. So now you can imagine the celebration we had when Heller came down. And of course, it's great to hear people say, sir, you were right. So it was a great battle for 46 years for my parents. In the last standing U.S. colony, where since 1951, the gun rights are treated as a privilege, this inspiring couple has been in the battle to change this absurd point of view. From 1951 to 2000, the law was so strict, only one individual per household had the privilege to own and carry a gun. The court would only grant the license to business owners or one head of household per home, meaning the wife could not carry unless she was a business owner. That was the trigger for this couple to fight for the right when Sandra wasn't allowed to carry. He suggested getting a business owner license, to which she says, no way. This is a discrimination against women and violates our rights. We have to change it. After 32 years, they finally did it. In the year 2000, after promoting many new legislations and opposing bills against guns, finally, with the help of good friends, they wrote a gun law that came through. And even though the final approved print is not exactly to what they were proposed, it is a current gun law in Puerto Rico. This was one big step toward gun ownership, but it's still an unconstitutional law. So the fight is still on for their own constitutional rights. All this time, they have worked and paid out of their pockets, all expenses and travels without any help or donations or of any kind. This year, 2012, another bill was written by these same four people, was introduced to the public and the government. With this new bill and the help of social networks, many people learned about the gun rights, the rights of the Second Amendment. With this, my mom and other ladies that joined us on the radio and TV talking about the rights and necessity of eliminating the gun law that goes against not only our Second Amendment, but also violates other rights. We decided to create our non-profit organization as we realized that we had followers. Hence the birth of Damas de la Segunda Enmienda, Ladies of the Second Amendment. So I am here today to learn from you all, and I ask all of you to please help us with this endeavor. In so many years, except for recent visits by Julian and Alan, thank you, no one from the state has helped to fight against our government in Puerto Rico. Bear in mind that the federal government uses our island as a proving ground for later export of bad gun legislations to the state. We have nightmares there. Currently, the federal prosecutor on the island is pushing for a legislation that would require all airlines to notify the local authorities, chief of police, for destination where guns in luggage have been declared. We constantly see where state are proposing anti-gun legislations very similar to those existent in our current Weapons Act. The opposition is having a field day with our law. Even though it doesn't work to stop or deter crime, what better proof do you need it doesn't work? We are part of the United States. We are born U.S. citizens. Many people that are paying members of organizations here today are complaining down home that we don't get the help from anyone. As new organization, I implore your help. We want to grow. We want to be able to have paying members, not just followers. We are helping some people in courts with attorneys that have offered their services pro bono, and we are also fighting in the Senate against new anti-gun bills and pushing new bills that are closer to our freedom and right. During the last session, we managed to get the new bill approved by a comfortable majority at the Senate, but regrettably, we didn't have time to process it for votes at the House. Our current process for acquiring a license is a nightmare. It doesn't allow anyone to practice, touch, use, or learn proper safe handling of guns unless you have a license. Which one? This license, the basic license, has a cost around $600. And for the concealed carry, it's an additional $1,000, plus the expenses of the guns. If you can get the court to grant it, by the way, after you submit documents declaring you're a good citizen and three people must be present to swear under oath that you are a law-abiding citizen, some of these documents they ask for are good standing form, proof of tax, and child support compliance. And none of this is required by law. But the court and the state are requiring it. The state has no respect for the law. As we can all agree, the right to own, carry, use weapons of any kinds for any legal purpose by law-abiding citizen is our born fundamental right. It is not just for Americans. It's a right of human nature to defend ourselves to defend ourselves and enjoy our possessions for recreational defense and any legal purposes. You can believe that in order to practice the shooting sport, you are forced by law to be a paying member of a gun club and a federation. And if you ever stop paying those memberships, you lose your license and guns. Gun laws don't help against crime. It nourishes it. Criminals don't care for the law. They never think they'll get caught. P.S. In Puerto Rico, gun registration has been in effect since 1951. All transactions regarding guns, including those between individuals, need to be informed and approved by the police. Of course, consistently, we are amongst the top 5 worst gun crime places in the nation. Tell that to those who think there's a loophole in gun shows. Thank you.